Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences on related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy on the nature of consciousness. We feature a stellar roster of special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. We'd like to let you know that we've got an abundance of support and resources available for people who've had near-death and similar spiritually transformative experiences, and we also conduct monthly support group meetings and all kinds of things. So we'd like to encourage you to please visit our website for more information. Visit towardthelight.org and our media site, which is towardthelight.info. This week I'm very pleased to have a fellow near-death experiencer and one whom I worked with whilst we were involved on the board of directors of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. Let's welcome to Toward the Light, Martha Cassandra St. Clair. Hello, Martha.
Hi, Juliet. It's great to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on Toward the Light, and I've really been looking forward to this because I know that we've
Thank
both
you.
Had a lot of history with this work in NDEs.
Yes.
And, of course, what I'd like to do always at the beginning is start by asking you to share your near-death experience, because it seems that our NDEs are always what catapult us onto a very significant life path. So why don't we start by your telling us about your near-death experience, which was quite profound in itself, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I will give you the short version. I've actually had several experiences. My first one, which I really didn't acknowledge until recently, was when I was born 2 months premature and nearly died. I don't actually remember that in full, but I do remember a little bit about that. But I think I will focus, and I bring this up because they say that from birth, that if you do have a near-death experience as a baby or as a child, that it affects your whole life. And I really think that in my case, it really did.
Well, I'm glad to share that, too, because I also had birth trauma and that sort of thing, but not really remembering the details of it, but that's so spot on, because likewise, you know, I've been a mystic and interdimensional all of my life.
Yes.
But then every progressive NDE has just brought that home even more strongly. So, thank you for mentioning that.
It seems to work that way, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, indeed it does.
The only thing I really recall about that is not at all the dying process or that in particular, but at one point in my life I was regressed because I wanted to remember some things, and what popped up for me was that I went into a space where I was before I was born, and I found myself sitting at a long table with 12 men in robes. Now, I don't know why they were just men, but they were, and they were in robes. And they were like giving me instructions before I was to be born, and they were saying to me, don't forget who you are, don't forget who you are.
Mm.
And they were surrounded in brilliant green light. And I remembered that in the process of wanting to remember more about my childhood and more about my early experiences, because evidently my early years were really traumatic as far as health and so forth. But I can go on, if you like, and tell you more about the experience.
Well, this is significant, Martha, because a fortnight ago I had Robert Schwartz. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's the author of Courageous Souls.
Uh-huh.
And that book is actually centered on pre-birth planning.
Oh.
So what you just described is also featured in his book, and he and I were talking about that, how a soul is regressed either via hypnosis or via speaking to a medium. And, you know, the scene that you were just describing was also depicted there, where some people would experience the sort of counsel, as it were.
Uh-huh.
And the soul making these pre-birth plans and actually opting to experience great challenges in one's life in a myriad
yeah.
of ways.
Yeah.
So Well, how interesting to segue into this.
Well, it is, and I would love to read his book. I believe I've heard his name. And
well, it's available through Toward the Light, so feel free to purchase it from us.
Let everybody do that.
Indeed.
I did find it comforting because it's like when I remembered that, it just awakened so much for me.
Yes.
And I also felt a little sadness because I believe that when most of us come here that we get some type of spiritual amnesia, or that when we're children, we're very perhaps clairvoyant or psychic or in touch with the other side, and then we gradually lose that because the society doesn't really support that.
There you go, exactly.
And so I found that really comforting and like sad and joyous at the same time.
Mm. And the importance of, you know, I think a big part of our work is to actually bring about that rekindling, that reawakening of our other senses.
Yes.
Know, because it's as natural as breathing. There's nothing woo-woo or weird about it. And it's certainly, it's ludicrous to regard it as being demonic or that nonsense. So.
Yes, that's so true. And it's when it's so second nature to some of us, it seems really bizarre, some of the things that are out there and the attitudes and so forth. But I believe that everyone really, of course, is a spiritual being. And,
yes.
And just by nature, we tend to get spiritual amnesia. And unless we have extraordinary experiences that we're fortunate enough to have, either through near death or some spiritual thing that happens to us, a lot of us kind of float through life a little bit, even if we have a hope and have an inkling that there's more.
Yes. So go ahead and tell us more about, you know, what's on your mind, what you'd like to share about this, because it's so relevant, and I think it's wonderful we're talking about it.
Well, I think that one reason to talk about all of these things, and one reason that I think that everyone is so fascinated by it, is because when we talk about the light, when we talk about spiritual dimensions, I think that something within our bodies, within our cells, within our souls, maybe even within our DNA, is like rekindled. And it's like a magnetic attraction. And we become, I believe, more of who we are as we remember through the light with other people. And it's why, for instance, even in IANS, the Near Death Experience Association, International Association for Near Death Studies, I should say, it's why that the majority of members are not even near-death experiencers. I think they just love it, and they're intrigued by it, and they want to understand it more. And even as I find myself talking about the subject with you, or when I lecture, or when I counsel, or when I hear other people's incredible stories, I feel like I step up in my vibration. I wake up more. I become more of who I am. And it becomes a really hopeful thing, I believe, putting us more, how shall I say, in the natural atmosphere of who we already are and what we are intended to be.
Oh, yes, I share that.
Yes, I know you do.
It's something that is so important that people understand more and more, and I'm sure you share this as I do. But a huge part of this work, and in fact, with me big in DE in the mid-70s, and, you know, all this time, even up until 1997, I still had never heard of Raymond Moody or any of this. So I was a real late bloomer and found out about IANS in 1997 and then joined immediately. But I was told during my NDE that I had to come back to this plane, and of course I did not want to. I was one of those unwilling, you know, individuals, but had to oblige just the same, to come back and share the message that life is indeed eternal, and to help remove the stigma of death and the fear of death, because death doesn't even exist as we know.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something, and I get the sense that all of us as experiences are compelled to share this, or at least some facsimile of it.
I think so, and I think that perhaps the reason that initially people shut down is because when they do share it, and especially back when, like for instance, when I had my, I wouldn't say it was my main near-death experience, but it was the one that was more as an adult, when I had that in 1974, That was even before Raymond Moody's book came out, and it just really wasn't discussed, and I didn't even know the term. And when I tried to share it with my family, they looked at me absolutely like I was crazy, like this just couldn't be happening to you. And I know also that my mom felt some fear about it.
Right.
So fortunately, things are really changing, and one of my heartfelt desires is to work more in hospice. I have been a hospice volunteer in the past, and I think that offering people hope and light and love and peace in their transitional times is so important, and yet we have to be careful that we don't, force our agenda on anyone.
Yes, exactly. And I also appreciate Anna Maria Hemingway's book, Practicing Conscious Living
mm-hmm.
and Dying. Of course, she was on the show recently, too.
Yes.
So was it in 1974? That's interesting because for me it was 75, 76. I lapsed into a coma on Boxing Day of 75 and then lost my vital signs on my birthday in 76. And, you know, like you, I had no idea about any of this stuff that was available. And PMH had her three NDEs in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
So
it seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Yes, and it's interesting how so many of us had these huge NDEs in the mid-70s.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think our soul probably chooses the time that these things happen. And
yes.
Honestly, I always forget if mine was the summer of 73 or 74, and I think it's out there in the media of both dates, but in any case, it was sometime around there.
And was that the water skiing event?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and tell us a bit about that.
Well, I was, I was living in the Bay Area in California, and I was a young divorced mother. My son was about 3 years old, and I was pretty much a regular person. I was working and going to school and being a mom. And I was away that weekend with my boyfriend at the time and my son, and we were water skiing with some friends. And I knew how to water ski, and I knew how to swim, and I wasn't afraid of the water. And so I was out in the boat water skiing for my last run of the day. And my boyfriend at the time, Denny, and his friend were in the boat, and my son was on the shore with some friends. Anyway, so anyone that water skis knows that you're supposed to have a watcher in the boat. One person's driving the boat and one person's watching you so that if you fall down or something happens that they stop the boat. So I was going along, and I fell down, and by some freak accident, the rope twisted around my left arm, and as I fell down, it dragged me behind the boat. And it sounds awful, but it was really a wonderful experience. And I had the experience because they weren't paying attention to me. They were actually drinking beer. And so I kept being dragged behind the boat. So anyway, pretty soon I was aware my arm hurt, and I understood what had happened. And I was thinking, you know, stop the boat, and they didn't. And pretty soon I experienced my spirit going out of my body, and I was above the area. I could see them driving the boat. I could see my body being dragged kind of under the surface of the water. I could see my son on the shore with some friends.
Now let me ask you here, did you have no sensation of drowning and all of that, even though it sounds like you were?
And no sensation of what?
Drowning?
Well, I was really fortunate. I had a full-blown near-death experience according to all the characteristics that you can have, and the way I understand that there's about 9 to 12 characteristics, and I had all of them, although I didn't have a life review. I was going behind the boat, and let me just kind of lead up to that. So I found my spirit watching myself, and then pretty soon I experienced going through a dark tunnel, and it was about 5 to 6 feet wide, and it seemed dark and alone, but it didn't feel frightening. In fact, it felt like I had done this before.
Yes.
Like, gee, this is familiar. And at that point, I started to get really excited, and as I came out of the tunnel, there was beautiful, gorgeous flowers and colors like you don't see anywhere on Earth. And then I found myself out in the universe. And there's more to the experience, but basically, I never swallowed a lot of water, and I never was unconscious. I had the full-blown experience, including being rescued and coughing up some water, but never being totally unconscious. So I was incredibly lucky.
And I know a lot of people, and the reason I ask that question too is because a lot of people will actually move out of their body before they have the, you know, actual experience of drowning or impact
or a car accident or whatever.
Yes. Yep. And so that's why I was asking that question, because again, the point of so much of this is to help eliminate fear.
Absolutely.
God, you know?
Absolutely. And it wasn't, and I tell people this when I lecture, because like with loved ones, if, you know, most of us are worried about a loved one, if they, how they died, if there was pain and suffering. And from my experience and my true belief is, when your spirit leaves your body, you're not suffering. Your body may be going through some suffering, but not your spirit. So the suffering comes, the pain can come when you come back into your body and maybe have to deal with the ramifications of that.
Yes. And oh boy, do we know that one really well.
Yeah. Yes.
And then what happened after that?
So what happened was I found myself out in the universe, and you know, when people have these experiences, they describe all kinds of places, a meadow, a beautiful heaven, maybe a gray space, maybe they see a relative. But in my case, I was out in the universe in the stars and galaxies, and it seemed perfectly normal. It was incredibly beautiful. It felt like home. And I don't remember what I looked like. Sometimes people ask me what I looked like, and I don't remember looking at myself, but I still felt like me. And
in the sense of having a humanoid type of form? Because, of course, you're not going to
lose your... My sense is I was in some kind of light body, but I don't remember looking at myself. Like, Daniel Brinkley describes how he looked at his hands and he could see through them, and they were, like, full of light, I think, kind of colors, or I think I heard him say something like that. But I wasn't that interested or concerned about myself or my body even being dragged. I was just so fascinated to be where I was, and it wasn't frightening. It felt incredibly comforting to me, like this grand adventure. And now, of course, you know, Juliet, that I was dragged, you know, maybe not this part, but I was dragged maybe, I don't know how long, a couple of minutes. How long can you go without totally swallowing a ton of water and completely dying? But because there's no time on the other side, you're in this timeless space, so a lot can happen in that other dimension.
Yes.
And while I was there, I could see that, indeed, there is no time, and time and space is a function of this dimension, and it's really hard to explain it unless you've been there. But anyway, so I found myself there, and this being appeared before me, Melchizedek, who was beautiful. He was very tall. He had on burgundy and gold and green robes and velvet and brilliant blue eyes. And he had a beard, and he looked ancient and yet young at the same time. And I seemed to know him, and it didn't seem unusual. And I felt like he was like a guide or teacher for me. And he was just bathed in this beautiful light. And he just said to me through thoughts, "Are you ready to come?" It was just the most natural thing in the world. And then he showed me a series of things to help me make up my mind. And my initial feeling was, now when everyone, I don't know of anyone that's seen that light that doesn't want to leave, because it's home and we remember that. But in my case, my son was little, and I didn't want to leave him. I know that parents do leave their children, and it seems very sad and hard to understand. But I could see there's a divine higher purpose for all of these things. In fact, I lost my father when I was young.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what I'm saying is, of course, it was very tempting, but my initial reaction was, no, I can't go, that I'm not ready. And so I did have a choice.
That's interesting, and some people indeed do have choices, and then some of us don't.
Well, and I think some that have a choice left.
Yes, of course.
They're gone.
But I've noted that a number of people like yourself, when they've got children or family members, they do opt to go back.
Yes, yes. And there's all kinds of reasons we come back, and I think it's important to say, too, that if anyone has lost a loved one out there and they're feeling really sad about it and angry, which can be another step of grief, or whatever they're feeling, please just know that there really is some higher reasoning for this that we can't always understand when we're here. And it's not that anyone ever would want to leave you. It's just that timing is everything. And I just have to believe that usually it's the right time when someone leaves.
Yes.
And they perhaps can see the higher ramifications of everything and how everything ultimately plays out that we really don't always at all have access to, I think, while we're here in this dimension.
And I want to thank you for stressing that point, because I feel that that's one that can't be stressed too much. You know, there's so much to this. And
yes.
People are still struggling with the blame or how could God be so cruel kind of
yes.
mindset, which is pitiful. And this is where we've got a lot of work set out for us
yes.
to help remedy that kind of thinking.
Well, and it is so true, and we have our human personality, and so, for instance, with myself, even though I spiritually have some understanding of these things, and honestly, the more I learn, I feel like the less I know.
Yeah, me too.
We just have a little glimmer, but my spiritual self does understand some things, but my human personality, like anyone else, can have a really hard time with death and losing family members and things, and even at this point, I still feel kind of, you know, at a loss about my father, and it's some part of my inner child doesn't understand and all this. So we don't necessarily have a niche on the market on this, but I think it's important to comfort others in any way that we can through our own experiences.
Sure, absolutely. And I'm a widow too, and my daughter and I will still get our little teary-eyed, choked-up spells, and even though we know that he's a free spirit, you know, and we're the ones on this plane, on this dimension, that are struggling with it from time to time.
Yes, and we get homesick, don't we?
Oh, boy. Understatement. I think at least once a day I do.
Yes, we get really homesick.
Wow. And so what happened after that? What did the labs do and all of that? Drinking and driving now. Not
yeah,
a good
really.
Idea.
Really? Well, what happened was, so I was out there talking to Melchizedek, and he showed me a series of things to, I guess he felt I needed to see. And one is I saw that we all have a purpose for being on Earth, a mission, if you'll call it that. And it may not always appear big or important to us, but if we're here, we all have something that we need to do. And I saw that I had a work that I would be doing, although I wasn't told at the time. How shall I say? I was told many things when I was in that dimension, but I knew that when I came back that I would forget a lot of it, which
yeah.
I've heard other people say, because if we remembered everything and had access to everything, there wouldn't really be any point in being here.
Yes, that's true. That's such a good point.
Yeah. So that was one part of it. The other is that he showed me ahead what would happen, that if I decided to leave, that I would indeed completely drown, that they would stop the boat, that my boyfriend would drag me up on the boat, that he would see me drowned, that they would take me to the shore, and because we were out kind of in the middle of nowhere, it would take a long time for paramedics to get to me, and I would not be resuscitated, and I would die, and that this would affect him for the rest of his life, that he would really never get over it. And, you know, it actually seemed funny to me because I was feeling so great and so alive that I thought, oh, for heaven's sakes, does he have to go through this, you know? And I didn't really want him to suffer, even though I was kind of mad at him for... my personality was a little mad at him when it happened, but I was more extremely grateful for the experience. And then the other thing was, of course, that I knew that it wasn't the right time to leave my son, and I just couldn't bear to do that. So... without being too long-winded, I'll tell you briefly some of the things I saw while I was there. I saw there was like, as I picture it now, for some reason, as I looked off to my left, there was great light, and the further I looked, the more great the light became, and I knew there was like an invisible border that if I went too far, it's almost like I'd be sucked into it or something, and I wouldn't be able to come back, which was very tempting.
Yeah.
And I saw also these beautiful, like temples. It just looked like temples of light where people were studying, and people that looked just like us, only they were all in white robes. And I could see like prisms of colors that I could see through kind of for the walls of these temples, and then almost like gold picture frames kind of around the temples. And then... Let's see what else. I know there's more, but, oh, I had some feelings about future Earth changes and things like that. But primarily, once I saw these things, oh, and then so much more, I remembered that we're not victims, that we choose to come here, that we choose our parents, that this is a university, that we've been here many times before, we come to study, and I could see a divine order to my life and even to my childhood, which had been really painful for me. So pretty soon, I was back in my body. I don't remember saying goodbye or please come get me when it's time or anything. I was just back. And the boat had stopped. He finally, I guess, realized, stopped the boat. And I was in the water, and I was coughing up water, and the rope was twisted around my left arm. But, of course, I was floating because I had a belt on, life belt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had a life belt on, and I was conscious. And he pulled me up in the boat just like I'd seen. And after I got done kind of coughing up some water, and I actually was surprised to find myself kind of angry at him, even though I'd had this incredibly blissful experience. And I think it's because the body has a consciousness. The body has fear. The body has anger. The body has things that it as itself can experience. And so I temporarily had that for him, but it didn't last very long. And he looked utterly panicked. And I never went to the hospital. The rope was kind of mushed in my arm to the bone on one side, and it sounds crazy, but, you know, we just sort of pulled it up and wrapped it up when we got back to the houseboat, and I was in such a state of bliss, and everything was surrounded in colors and light for days after that with auras and things that I was just happy.
Wow.
And he was in shock. Yeah.
Did you talk to him at all about your experience?
You know, I was babbling. The only thing I remember was I was babbling to him about this beautiful man in robes. And I don't remember what he said to me. He clearly knew I almost drowned. Mm-hmm. And he was just stunned. And when I got back to the shore, now we've been gone maybe 10 minutes in the boat, I'm guessing, 10 or 15 maybe where we were driving. My son said, "Mommy, what took you so long? I thought you weren't coming back."
Mm.
So he had some kind of feeling about it.
Sure.
And to this day, he won't talk to me about it.
Wow.
But I've often wished that I could get in touch with Denny again and ask him more about that experience, and I haven't managed to do that, so I haven't been able to do that. So, Denny, if you're out there.
Yes, indeed. Feel free to contact. Well, that, you know, it's very interesting to compare notes with fellow experience and the myriad of things that can happen, and even the different attitudes. Like, for example, I had absolutely no sense of fear or anger, even when I gradually descended back into the physical body, and, you know, because my experience was... you know, I didn't even experience a humanoid body. I experienced more being a luminous bubble or orb.
Yes.
And I didn't experience the tunnel. And PMH Atwater pointed out that, she points out that actually the vast majority of NDEs do not experience the tunnel.
Yes, I've read that. Yes.
Interesting. We'll just have... I think it really, well, it depends on a number of things, really. It depends on where our mind is at, our belief system, that during our near-death state, that is going to determine where we go and what we experience. So some people may indeed still experience a humanoid kind of body.
Yes.
Some people will experience being more of a bubble.
Yes.
Some people will go deep into space, and that was my case as well, and so it was with PMH and yourself. A number of us go through that. Some people will hover around their bodies during their near-death episode, but I never did any of the time.
I didn't want to hover very much either. I just wanted to go and go. And
yeah.
I think that we do attract kind of where we're at, and what's so interesting about it is that, how shall I say, we don't, especially if we haven't read anything about these things or don't know these things consciously, that we just go where we go. And some people will say to me, well, how come some people see Jesus and some see a hellish state maybe and some just see Aunt Mary? And you know, all I can say is I believe that we attract according, as you say, to our belief system, to our consciousness. But it's important to not, for anyone that maybe had a less than what they would call stellar experience, to not beat themselves up because they, you know, got what they got. And it's not the point to have a, let's see, how shall we say, Juliet, a hierarchy of whose experience is better than someone else's,
exactly.
You know.
Good point. And, you know, people experience what they need to. And, you know, again, it's kind of reminding me of this book, Courageous Souls, because our souls that are always connected to and in communion with Source know what is right for us, what we need to experience on this plane and even in other dimensions.
Yes.
So every near-death experience is valid and spot on. And I remember one person asking me, well, which one is right? You know, because a lot of them conflict as far as the messages or the experiences.
Yes.
And I say they're all right. Because
of course.
It's like the rings of an onion. You're experiencing multiple dimensions. And then, how do you call it, sort of partitions or spaces within a single dimension. So,
yes.
You know, they're all going to be different, and they're all spot on. You know, they're all real. And
absolutely, right. And we can't possibly compare. It's like comparing, you know, a tortoise with a rose or something, or a...
Yeah.
Or... It is what it is.
And it's just, you know, I feel so compelled to really share with people. They're all very, very precious and full of rich meaning and purpose. So, and then they catapult us onto whatever path we need to experience thereafter. So then that leads me to the next question. What happened to you after this, and where did it lead you to?
What happened to me after I came back?
Yes.
You mean as far as my life?
Right.
Yeah. Everything changed. I was very fortunate in that I felt, I felt so loved, and I felt so connected to everything. Now, I was always kind of a spiritual child, and the good part of my childhood is religion was never forced on me in a bad way, and the experience I had in the Presbyterian Church and even the Catholic Church later were good for me, and of course I didn't buy all the doctrine, but it was comforting for me how I chose to do it.
Yes.
But it expanded my awareness, and one of the things I had come back for was I could see that I wasn't, and I forgot to mention this, that my spirit and soul were not in alignment with my personality was not in alignment with my soul. Now, of course, I was in my early 20s, so it was okay that I was perhaps immature or whatever, but I could see that I had a life purpose and that I wasn't really living that completely. So I felt like through not even a conscious intention of my own, but because of the transformation I had, that started coming into more into focus, and I seemed to find myself with more metaphysical people, and I'd be in metaphysical groups and people would say, you know, things like, can I come talk to you? And it was just kind of strange how it happened, but I started doing readings for people, and it's not that I had all the answers, but I seemed to have something that seemed to be helpful and comforting for others. But then truly, you know, life moves on, and there were some hard things that happened to me also in later years, and I think that if we knew everything that was going to happen, we wouldn't necessarily come back, but
yes.
What incredible growth, too.
Yes.
So...
Now, did it happen with you that you actually got into the work and vocation centered around the near-death experience and several years after the fact?
Well, what happened was, and this is so common, I think, that people have these experiences, and then, of course, they don't hear, especially if it's a long time ago, they haven't heard about this or the term or even Raymond Moody's book that came out in 75. But I had read some books and things, but not when I was that young. And I had read Betty Eady's book, the famous Betty Eady's book, and on the back of it, she acknowledges Seattle IONS, again, the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And I went, wow, I didn't even know there was an organization. And so I immediately contacted them and went to a conference and then started lecturing, and then my whole life changed, and I was...
What year was that?
So happy.
What year was that?
That was, I think it was 94.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ahead of me. Wow.
but a long time past my experience, and I just felt so happy, like, oh my God, I'm home, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
So
were you in Seattle at that time, or?
Pardon me?
Were you in Seattle at that time?
I was living in Portland. Mm-hmm.
In Oregon?
Yes.
Okay, not Portland, Maine.
yeah, right, Portland, right. Oregon, and that kind of catapulted everything.
Yes.
I wanted to say one thing, Julie, before I forget.
Sure, please.
I got an email from someone this morning, and I think he had probably seen my website or seen a YouTube video that I have out or something. And he asked a question that is often asked of us, although I can't say someone's ever emailed me and asked me this, but he said, how come your death experiencers always say they're at a loss for words to describe their experience, and can anyone ever describe it accurately? And the second part of that was, what can you say to us skeptics? And it was a, you know, a nice, respectful email, and I wrote back and I said, well, it's because there's really no words for it, but we all do the best we can, and I believe we describe it as accurately as we are able to. And then I said, you know, for skeptics, that I can understand how people could feel this way, and that that my job, I felt, was to try and bring comfort, but to not force anything on anyone. And that, of course, there's things I wish I'd said, like I believe we get spiritual amnesia, and try and keep an open mind, and then also that I believe the experience clearly happens to our soul. It doesn't happen in our brain. So all the medical and scientific stuff that, you know, puts it down, that's fine if we're talking about the brain, but when you're out of the body, it's not in your brain.
Well, exactly, and I really want to thank you for making that truly valid point, because number one, a lot of these people are coming from that default place of ignorance and identifying with the ego
or fear,
body and fear,
uh-huh.
Exactly, and not really realizing that we are not our bodies, we are not our brains. And secondly, as you may know, I've had Dr. Peter Finnick, I've had Dr. Timson Lommel on the show, and recently I had Dr. Mario Beauregard, who is a neuroscientist, and
yes,
he's the author of The Spiritual Brain. All of these people have pointed out, number one, that it is impossible for the NDE to be the product of a dying brain, because as all of us point out, this is separate from the brain.
Yes.
It's completely separate from the brain and out of the body. And so, and in fact, look at somebody like George Rodinia, who had actually wound up in the morgue in the autopsy table.
So
three
amazing.
Days dead.
Yeah.
I mean, he was truly dead.
Truly dead.
And yet, he had this consciousness and this profound experience, and you could see the glistening in his eyes. You know, in the film Life After Life, with my which my friend Peter Schocke produced based on Raymond Moody's book.
Yes.
And, you know, and silly people like Susan Blackmore, oh, don't get me started, you know.
I know, me too.
Kevline, and they just want to insist all of this stuff, and I want to say to these people,
it's such fear, and it's so easy for those of us that have had experiences to be to get offended or annoyed or something, because to me it's like, how shall I say, it's like somebody trying to tell someone, say you're pregnant and there's someone out there that's never been pregnant and they're trying to tell you what it's like to be pregnant.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And
they're antagonistic and so on.
Yeah, it just, I think that there's just a lot of fear, and what they're not realizing is that there's a mind of God, energy, light, love, whatever you want to call it, that creates our body, that creates our brain, that creates our auras even. A body doesn't create the aura. God creates the energy that's around us, that is there, whether we have a body or not.
Exactly. And as also has been pointed out by the above mentioned, and as well as PMA Atwater and myself, is that the brain is the receiver. It is not the broadcaster.
Yes.
You look at the brain as the radio, and the radio or the computer can be damaged, but the broadcast still happens.
Yeah, that's a favorite way to put it. That's great.
Yes, and it's so spot on. And, you know, so many of us, including the scientific, many people in the scientific community, have been able to come to this, you know, realization. So it does have me a bit gobsmacked when some people will still insist that it's a dying brain or hallucinations. But again, mm-hmm. both Peter Finnick and Pim Van Lommel, and they've mentioned this on my show, that they really describe the great difference between a hallucination and a near-death episode. Because, for example, when one is in a hallucination, one does not experience the clarity and the cohesiveness
mm-hmm.
that one having a deathbed vision and a near-death episode experiences. So,
yes.
you know, again, we've got so much monumental proof that these are very, very different experiences altogether.
And yes, and it's, again, it's just so hard to describe it, but I would say, as you've heard from many say, it's the most real thing that ever happened to me. And how I look at it is that where we're living now in this dimension on the Earth, this is really the dream and the illusion.
Yes,
and the
yes.
other side is really what's true and real.
Absolutely.
And it's like we have a dream at night, we wake up and we go, that's just a dream. Well, when we die, we wake up and go, oh, this was just a dream. And it doesn't mean that it's not important or valuable or that, you know, things don't have meaning and purpose and love and all of this. But on some level, it's not real.
Exactly. Oh, we might have a caller. Do we have a caller?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
You're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
My name is Elaine.
Hello, Elaine.
Hello.
Hi. I'd like to know if you could connect me to my mother, who's on the other side.
Okay.
Did you want to address that, Martha?
I didn't quite hear about her mom on the other side. Do you have a question? Or
does she have any messages for me? Could she hear me when I talk with her?
Oh. And, Elaine, where do you live?
In New Jersey.
And, well, I didn't know we were going to do this, but I'll tell you what comes to me. I feel her saying that you worry too much. Do you feel like you do?
What do you mean, worry too much?
Pardon me?
What do you mean?
Do you feel like you worry too much?
Well, I don't know. I guess doesn't everybody?
Well, I do.
Most people do. Hello?
Okay. Yeah, one thing that I can say is that, I do offer readings, and the fact is that when you are speaking to your mom, she always hears you because, you know, we're the ones who are more blocked from messages that come from other places, but she is not blocked from hearing your message and even feeling your love, even
hello,
without...
I can just about hear you. Can you please talk louder?
Okay. Well, why don't you call back at another time, because we do offer these services,
now,
but the
now,
show is,
now,
is
now,
we're doing an interview
clear.
Right now. Thank you so kindly for your call, love, and blessings to you. Okay, Martha, we can proceed. And, you know, a lot of people do need to have the comfort that their loved one is aware of their messages and
yeah.
trying to reach out to them and that kind of thing. And actually, we're going to be talking to Don shortly, because his mom just transitioned too. So this is, you know, this is beautiful. And thanks for that little segue.
Yes, yeah. And I just want to say that I do believe that our loved ones are around us.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe that it's also important that we release them and let them go to do what they need to do. But there really is such a thin veil between heaven and earth, and that we are greatly surrounded with our loved ones, our ancestors, with guides and teachers and angels. And I believe they also come to us in dreams, and that if we're not experiencing contact with them, it can be because we're feeling fearful or sad, or we're blocking that.
Yes, good point.
But I also wanted to mention, could I mention my website, Julie?
Please,
Julia.
Please, Juliet, not Julie.
I know who you are, but I had a favorite cousin, Julie, and so that pops in my mind sometimes.
All right. please, by all means, we want to share your website. Absolutely.
You know, well, I love your elegant name, and it's just MarthaSt.Clair.com, and St. Clair is STCLAIRE.
Okay.
I think I have that correct, and now I'm
yes.
thinking, are there some periods in there?
No, I just remember because I've created hot links to your website, and of course, you've got a page on my website, towardthelight.org/Martha St. Clair, which is written in
yes,
the
on my resource page. I have some wonderful links and resources, including yours, Juliet, and
great.
Several of yours.
So people can get, if people get lost, they can always find your page on actually on my blog and on my website, and that links directly.
That's right, and I do offer mediumship and intuitive counseling, and I love to lecture.
Great, and speaking of, do you have anything coming up that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Let's see. I'm taking some time off during the summer, but I will be in Virginia Beach lecturing to. You know the group, Julia. It's the Ions Virginia Beach group, the Friends of Ions group, on October 4th.
Oh, well, I will be there because I'm moving down
yes,
there.
Yes, you are. You'll have to come see me.
Hello. Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I spoke there at the ARE Center for the Virginia Beach Ions in a few years ago, and I'm looking forward to being back there.
It's a great group. It's a large group.
Oh, yes. This is tremendous. So that will be in October then.
Yes, and it is also listed on my events page.
Great. Oh, we'll have fun.
We will.
That's wonderful news. Well, tell us some of the things that you do like to... Well, let's get back to some of your work again. When you actually knew, all right, now it's time for me to get into the work centered on near-death experience. Was that in the early 90s when you discovered IAN?
Yes, you know, it all just kind of flowed, and yes. I think how we know we're on the right track with something is it really makes our soul happy.
Yes.
And I started lecturing and also started doing more counseling, and then got away from a little bit of that for some years because we have other things in our life sometimes we need to handle, but... my main focus now is continuing to lecture on your death experience and related topics and really helping to alleviate fear. And I, a few years ago, got a master's in gerontology because I felt led to really work more with the elderly, and I've been a hospice volunteer for a long time in Portland. And I feel that whatever we can do to help alleviate the fear of death, and, of course, also co-create heaven on earth while we're here, is so important because we talk so much about the light and going to the other side, but I believe that we're living in phenomenally transformational times.
Yes.
And that we're all really co-creating a different energy on earth, one of more consciousness, one of more love, one of more acceptance. And it may look like things are worse than ever on earth right now. It truly does look pretty bad, but I think on inner levels there's something great and extraordinary happening. And the more that we can learn about that and be aware of that, the more that things will shift in a positive direction.
Well, that's really a very important point, Martha, because when I look at all this too, and I share exactly what you've been stating here, is that as it appears indeed to be getting darker out there in this world, in this dimension, so too there's a tremendous quickening and awakening going on.
Yes.
On all of these very deep and painful challenges and violations and violence that's occurring is also forcing us to, you know, to embody the light even more. And another thing that I always share about this is the fact that if the light truly were not going to prevail, if love were truly not going to prevail, then why, goodness me, would we have been sent back here in the first place to do this work? So I've got the utter conviction.
That's exactly true.
Yes. The light is going to prevail, and
yeah.
It is our work. You know, sometimes in order to understand what is, we've got to experience what isn't.
Yes.
So, in order for us to understand that we are light, we've got to understand the absence of light first.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you were pointing out, too, this plane is like a huge laboratory or school.
Yes.
Where we're all in the process of massive discovery and experimentation and growth and healing and becoming more aware.
Yes.
But I do feel that, it's... Again, it's really, really important to focus on the positive and not allow ourselves to be swept away.
Well, it is,
yeah.
Because I believe that our thoughts are creating our reality much faster than they used to. And so,
ooh, yes.
You know, in that other dimension, you think something and you're there. But I think it's very important to watch what we think and feel because it's manifesting faster. and especially with the mainstream being so fearful and so negative about things, and I don't mean that at all as a criticism. I mean it as a reality of natural feelings about what's going on in the world, that somebody has to balance it out with calling in a higher vibration, a higher energy. And I know that to maybe the normal person listening to this type of talk, it sounds like, you know, psychobabble or metaphysical mumbo-jumbo, but we really live in a space where there's frequencies of energy and DNA and light and manifestations, and everything that we have on Earth was created first by thought.
Yes.
So we do have some ability and some power over these things through God within us, and I think that there is a great breaking down that's happening, and some of these things are destined to be in order that we can shift into the reality that was intended long ago.
Well, recently a friend of mine put a very important message at the end of his newsletter, and I'd like to share that because it really addresses what was going on right now. It's my friend David Icke, bless him, and he states, "It's a time to stay calm and detached from events, in the sense of observing the experience and not being it. As I talked about, we are infinite consciousness. What happens to us in this decoded illusion is an experience, that's all. If we get caught in being the experience in this next stage, we will suppress through fear our true potential to awaken to a greater awareness, and we will suffer emotionally where there is no need to, if we move our angle of perception. Challenging times indeed, but isn't that why we came?" So I think that it's really important to say, all right, this is what's going on, but there's a higher reality, there's a higher dimension, and when we can remember, and I think that's part of the reason that we have these near-death experiences is to prove the fact that we are divine consciousness with infinite possibility. We are always connected to and in communion with Source, and it's only the ego that perceives otherwise. So it's important that we not get caught up in the fear, the low vibrational frequency that is that dominates the ego, and move into the love, which is what the soul is aligned with. So,
it's so true, and to not identify so much with the feeling body, which is sometimes easier said than done. But
yes.
You said that was so beautiful what you read, Julia, and what you've said. I couldn't agree more.
Yes, and bless David. He's just shared so much with us. He's a wonderful spirit, and in fact, when he was on the show last year, we were discussing a year ago, May. We were discussing his book, so aptly entitled Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion.
Yes.
You know, that's just, if we're going to say anything that is totally and completely spot on, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need to sort of keep repeating that mantra, as it were, because it really is the truth about being, and anything that would, you know, try to push fear is, you know, there was something that came to me many, many years ago when actually I had fallen into a state of sheer terror. And this really sweet spirit said to me, if it isn't coming from love, it isn't real.
That's right.
And I thought, ooh, you know, hold fast to that, and also consider the source when these scary, ugly thoughts come into our minds, you know.
Yes.
Consider the source. And again, if it isn't coming from love, it isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's it. That's a huge part of our work. Now, we've just got a couple of minutes here. Is there anything coming up that you would like to share with us, or any?
Well, I think only that for anyone listening that hasn't had a near-death experience, please just know how loved you are. And I think there's a danger a little bit in talking about near-death experience sometimes, because people can feel left out. They can feel perhaps that people have had some extraordinary near-death experience or spiritual experience, that we have something that they don't have. And while we may have the appearance of something that they don't have. In truth, we're all the same. We're all a part of God, and we're all on the path waking up. So just for everyone to really love themselves, be proud of who they are, be good to themselves, and know that we're all in this together.
Well, this is really wonderful, too. And there's also the fact that people can have out-of-body experiences,
yes,
or what we call spiritually transformative experiences.
Yes, there's other... How shall we say there's many paths to God?
Yes, absolutely. And indeed, one doesn't need to have a death experience in order to really transcend this plane altogether and to align with one's soul and experience the light. In fact, Nancy Clark, you know, she's a wonderful lady,
yes,
in Ohio. She had that profound spiritually transformative experience when she traveled into the light whilst giving a eulogy.
That's
talk about profound.
I know. just amazing, and it was so wonderful to hear about that. And
yes.
I think people, in closing, I'll just say that people always wonder why we get what we get or whatever that's about, but I guess we just needed it at the time, and there's just so much we don't know. But I think we just open our hearts and trust our souls and spirit to move us along, we'll be fine.
And I think you made the right point right there, trusting our soul and our spirit, because that is what is always connected to the love and to truth. Again, if you ever experience something that is fearful and upsetting, consider the source and remember that if it isn't coming from love,
yes,
it isn't real. And that's really important. Another really quick question I'd like to ask you is how do you feel that the progress is in more and more people understanding and more support being available for the experience?
I think
being treated like a lab rat, as it were.
Yes, I think that there's been so many books out there. It's been on television and the media so much.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much out there that's available. I think it's helping people. I think it's comforting. I think it's more in the mainstream. And I think it's all part of our growing consciousness, for instance, with things like Oprah, you know, doing this incredible web thing. How could I forget his name? You know.
Oh, Eckhart Tolle?
Yes, who wrote The Power of Now, and
yeah,
then his incredible book he has out now is just a testimony to it's like the 100th monkey, you know, there's a definite waking up going on that's making a big difference. And it's pretty exciting.
And not the least of which is this premier radio show centered on near-death and related experiences and topics. And
I think your show has made a huge difference, Juliet.
Oh, thank you.
Just a huge difference.
And it's important that we do, because it really is about the love. And again, I maintain that if love were not going to prevail, then I don't think we'd even be here, to be honest. Oh, goodness.
Well, absolutely not.
It's been so wonderful having you with us, Martha. It's so nice to talk to you again, because I remember sitting in Chicago at the IN board meeting there. And
I remember sitting in a restaurant with you, too, with some others. I can't remember if it was Thai food or whatever, but it's wonderful to be with you again, Juliet. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
So wonderful to be with you.
Thank you. We'll have to do it again.
Yes, yes. And again, your website is Martha St. Clair. MartaStClaire.com.
Yes, I'd be happy to hear from anyone.
All right, love. Well, blessings, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Juliet. Much love to you and everyone out there.
Oh, love to you, too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. With Martha St. Clair, and for the next hour on Toward the Light, we are going to have BBS Radio's own Don Newsom, and we're going to be talking to him shortly about the after-death communications he's had with his mom. So stand by, we'll have a little bit of music, and then we'll come back for the next hour of Toward the Light. Please stay with us.
Thank you.
welcome to the second hour of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. And for this hour, this is kind of fun. We're doing a double header this week, having two guests on Toward the Light, which is really, really lovely. So now we're going to welcome on Toward the Light, BBS Radio's own Don Newsome. Hello, Don, and welcome to Toward the Light, friend.
Oh, thank you, Juliet. It's a pleasure to be here. It really is. Thank you for inviting me on.
Well, it's really wonderful to have you. And I know that you had a little while back, you'd gone up to, I believe it was Washington State in America, and you had some very profound experiences with your mom. And I thought, well, it would be so lovely to have you on Toward the Light and give you an opportunity to share some of these experiences, because I remember that you were quite elated and feeling a lot of joy, and I really felt a lot of joy coming from your mom as well. So if maybe we could start by sharing a little bit about the experience that you had, and of course you can let our listeners know again, you are the founder and president of BBS Radio, and it's just been so wonderful being a part of the BBS family and having Toward the Light on the air for over 2 years now. So everybody would get to applaud Don, because he tirelessly works behind the scenes for hours on end. I refer to him as my favorite octopus. So you're wonderful, and you've been doing great work to help bring truth and love and light out into the world via this wonderful radio network. So tell us a bit about your experiences with your mom, Don.
Well, thank you. You know, I don't deserve all the accolades. I honestly...
Oh, yes, you
that,
do.
No,
you're light just like we all are.
Yeah, but there are some profoundly loving and generous people who are taking action. I gotta tell you, that's why it's hard for me to get on interviews, only because I find myself talking about me way more often than I like. It's tough for me because I know so little, and I'm learning so much, and I'm having such a great time doing it, and I love people so dearly that, you know, the rest, I don't really know what to say, because I have no answers. I don't even know if I'm looking for answers. I think I'm looking more to be able to show people that, you know, there's a beautiful universe, but until you touch the one inside yourself, the one outside you doesn't make much sense.
Yeah.
And that's really been kind of like a balancing act for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've loved it, so I really love the fact that you invited me on your show, because you know you have a special place in my heart, and you always will, because you have a flavor and a heart and a passion and a compassion that's second to nothing I've known, and I love that.
Well, it's very mutual, Don, and it's so wonderful to have you, and I think that, you know, I have to say I really share your experiences, and in fact I say this often, and even I've heard other people saying it. Margaret just said it too. It feels like the more we learn, the less we know. And it's true, you know, we're ravenous for knowledge, and it's a very special gift. It's typically true of near-death experiences, but I think it's true for a lot of people who've had transformative experiences, and I'm sure that you're one of those. It's a wonderful place to be wide open, and, you know, to experience the humility of feeling that we know so little, because actually I think that is the case, that we really do know so little compared to what is still there to be received as far as knowledge and experience goes. But I think as we move along, and, you know, again, I was so touched by the experience that you had with your mom, because in fact I'm feeling her presence right now. I just feel this really glowing, happy, playful spirit, and I feel a deep sense of connection and communion, and that she's really wanting you to move forward in your life in such a huge way, and to pursue your dreams, and, you know, be true to what is in your soul, it feels to me like you've got her full endorsement, and that's really, really wonderful.
You know, I've always known that, and I feel it.
Right.
And thank you, thank you. She is a shining light. She was when she was here, and she still is, and she's near. So, I mean, I love spending time in quiet moments where I get to feel her energy and her playful spirit, just like you're saying. And she's overwhelmingly grateful. She has a lot of gratefulness energy and a lot of things that she likes to bring back. I mean, the wisdom now she can touch on. See, it's kind of nice because she's known us for a very long time. And now she has the ability to tap into information that is massive reservoir and then bring those pieces of the feelings and the understandings, at least to me. Folks, I'm not going to call this communication because I am not a medium. I've never spoken to the dead that I know of yet.
Unless, there's no such thing as death anyway, so we're
right.
Not dead.
Exactly.
Exactly. Dead.
Now, have I had odd communications? Yeah, many. Weird ones all the, you know, used to get... I want to go into it, but there's a lot of unusual things out there in the world, and it all communicates one way or another.
Absolutely. And the fact is, Don, we are all natural mediums. I mean, one can call it whatever one wants to, but there's nothing woo-woo or weird about it.
No.
You're just connecting. You're just
But again, that might be using a more of a definitive word, like there never is, when there is actually, in many cases, a lot of what I like to teach. This is a quote I love to use. There is a lot of machinations coming from overactive imaginations.
Mm.
Now, that just to me seems to be a valid point. I don't want to go off on a tirade. I'm just feeling too great with your energies around me to do that to your show.
Yeah.
So I just feel that there are people that talk a great game, but in truth, it's time to take it a step beyond that, and that's to bring the heart into it, because once it does, then it starts to take action, or right action. I mean, that's an old saying, but it just, you take the next right step, and you don't have any regrets, you don't have any illusions, you don't have any victimization complexes, or that you're a victim. You somehow know that you create every moment when you create it, and that everything around you is because you're within a magnetic understanding of it, and it you, and you're more responsible for that which is closer to you. But eventually you ultimately are, in a very large way, responsible for everything.
Yes, that's a wonderful point you're making. And I get the sense that your mom was one who really encouraged you from a very early age. Am I right about that? Because obviously you've taken on a huge endeavor here to, provide a portal for very important messages to be conveyed and shared throughout the world. And this is huge, and it's something that is very, very exciting to me. And I'm seeing this beaming, loving face from your mom. I love her energy, and I thought, oh, this would be so lovely to talk about this, because again, we're really adding just a little more solid proof to this continuum of consciousness and of life and of the communion that takes place, and that's why I wanted to ask you about this. Because
it's full of life. You know, if people were to just say, okay, let's switch it around. Now I can see everything that I couldn't see before, but nothing of what I could.
Yeah.
What would that do to you?
Exactly.
Like all of a sudden you can see the other 90%, but you can't see the 10%.
That would be fun.
Right?
You know, that's an interesting point too, Dawn, because of course David and I have talked about this and a number of other people, the so-called 90 or 95% of what's considered junk DNA. and that is actually the part of the DNA that is interdimensional.
Yeah, jumping DNA, you mean? Exactly. It's
they
jumping
call it jump DNA.
DNA,
which of course it is not. You know,
no, never has been.
Exactly, and then imagine if we were using the remaining 90% of our brain. So that's a wonderful point. And again, the brain is the receiver, like the radio.
Yeah.
It's not the broadcaster.
Exactly. Does it really matter? Here's the thing. You know, I mean, bigger brains, more knowledge. We have savants here on the earth that have access to incredible amounts of data in their mind. You know, I mean, are we here to learn all the facts, or are we here to address how we feel about them? Are we here to show a greater understanding for what is? Because what is always will be. It again, it's like you said earlier, thank Kevin's, it's experiential. It's the beauty of the journey and not worrying about a timeline, because it's all part of the now.
Exactly. And it was interesting talking to Martha, and she'd gotten the email from somebody who was trying to understand, you know, why we have such a hard time expressing something that really, in fact, is so ineffable. And
that's what fools you.
Space.
Yeah, that's what fools you. It's the simplicity and the basics of things that fool you. That's why they always want to get kids at an early age. It's putting stumbling blocks into the foundation is the best way to make it happen, and psychiatric drugs now seem to be the method of choice.
Yeah.
But again, it's indoctrinating the mind, because when you get back to the simplest and the purest form of it, you're at truth. You can all agree on a truth point, can't you? Because you brought it down to its simplicity, its basic structure. So people are going to get back to that. They're not going to worry so much about being smart and intelligent. They're going to utilize what they've got. I mean, some people don't have the brains. You know, you think God should have given them, but fortunately, these people are remarkable in extraordinary ways. I've met a few of them, and unfortunately, that's not always the case. But what we find is that you're here to bring the known, right? The known, what's in your heart, because that's the only thing really that's known, to the unknown, and experience it, and create, be co-creative. I believe that. I honestly think because I've had enough of my own meditations to believe this. I don't care what anybody tells me, and I've experienced it on not just mental levels. Well, maybe it's all mental.
Well, I don't think so, really, because there's a difference in the consciousness that comes from the heart, and then the ego.
Yeah, but
it filters all of that, you know.
Exactly. I must say the joy levels are extreme. It's almost like there's a constant party going on, and everybody's invited.
Well, there you go, and I'm pleased that you're making that point, because as Martha and I were talking about also, and a number of guests and I have talked about this, is that one doesn't have to have a death experience in order to experience this utter joy and bliss. You can just be, well, you can be at the control panel on the radio station, or you can be out in the garden, or you can be at the piano making beautiful music, and then you pop into this profoundly transformative experience.
And it's not even hard to get there.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, that's why I like to ask people to share their experiences, because every little experience that is shared, that is told, somebody else is going to glean some peace of mind and ease from that. You know, okay, well, since anybody can experience this, so can I. You know, and it is something that is a very, very special experience, and something so spontaneous and that changes and transforms our lives forever. So if you don't mind me asking, Don, what were some of the experiences that you had with your mom? Now, was it she and or you who were having these after-death communications, or both? Maybe deathbed visions, too.
Oh, you know, boy. You know, when I communicate with my mother now, It's a knowing. It's less a trying. In other words, I'm so comfortable with the fact that she's over. It's no big deal. I'll go over. We'll all go over. I mean, It's such a comforting experience, and to know how energy works because of the way I somehow see it, and I see it, I don't know. I just seem to see it in some respect, I guess. So looking at it flowing constantly, I don't really have that much fear of the unknown, because we're meeting the unknown every moment.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that, you know, again, when people can realize how very simple it is, you were talking about...
You don't come here knowing it all. You know just a little, so you must have enough.
Yeah, yeah. And it, you know, it really is something that people relax into. In fact, when I was in Nashville, I was tutoring somebody about mediumship, and I said, it isn't something that you put effort into or that you try. You relax into it, and then it flows, and it is just so natural. And we got it as children, but then as we get out and are shoved into these prisons called schools, you know, then we're taught to forget who we are, and we're taught to forget truth. And so then it's interesting to go full circle. We come into this plane very aware, very conscious of our connection with Source and with awareness of our past lives and that sort of thing. And then there's the imposed amnesia that happens, as well as being conditioned out of trusting our intuition and our experiences and our invisible friends who are real. And then as we get older in life, a lot of this stuff will start to come back to us.
Only now, it seems. I mean, I don't think that would have been true for the past generations. For quite some time. I would have to say we're living in extraordinary times, because people can tap into that without knowing much and somehow recognize the validity and the truth to it.
Yes, yes. And, you know, that to me is very, very exciting news because of this tremendous quickening that is going on.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a tremendous force to be reckoned with, because I always maintain, well, if the light were not going to prevail, then why would we be here doing this tremendous work?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's really wonderful. Why don't you share with the listeners, you know, the vision that got you onto the path, you know, starting BBS Radio. I mean, obviously you had a tremendous vision, which has come to fruition, and so many people because of BBS Radio. And also I want to acknowledge our friends at the Conscious Media Network, because they're doing the same thing, and this really makes me excited.
I love that group.
Oh,
Conscious Media Network. We have them front and center on our website, because we love them. They're doing great things, great, great things.
And this wonderful opportunity for these powerful messages to be transmitted all over the world. So this is really, really wonderful to me. So when did this vision take hold, and I sense that some special experience happened to you?
You know, there,
I'll put you on this.
It wasn't a single, well, it might have been. You know, I don't know.
A domino effect, probably,
it was,
eh?
It, you know, I somehow don't like to think that there was this one thing that woke me up. I like to somehow believe that I've just been figuring it all out. It gives me a sense of ego, folks. I need it. I feel like the simpler I keep it, the more heartfelt, the easier it is to understand. I don't know, you know, I'm not searching for a million answers. I'm searching for the next moment of my highest expression.
Right.
So, when did it all change? Well, I've had some mysterious episodes, physical and life-altering. They're unexplainable to the point that... you can try to explain them, and a lot of people have them. That's why they're not uncommon anymore. They're getting more and more common. But, you know, in my case, my life was wrong. I was in an oil business. I didn't enjoy it. I mean, I did, and I didn't, because somehow it seemed the easy way. It seemed, you know, the easy way into money, and I felt wrong. I mean, I never in my heart ever doubted myself or thought I couldn't make it. That's just never occurred to me. What occurred to me is somehow I was in the wrong place, doing the wrong industry at the wrong time. And every damn thing felt wrong. And it was confusing. And so I led myself, you know, on an interesting mode of thinking. And one day, you know, I was driving back to the place we were staying. And I pulled over off the side of the... I was within 100 yards of the place we were staying. Pulled over on the little drive up to the place. Right off the road. And I thought, you know, something is so wrong. I mean, so wrong. I you know, a sadness that's overwhelming. And I sat there kind of like in a daze because I was just really overwhelmed. And something started to descend over my vehicle. Could it have been an angel? Yep. Could it have been Archangel Michael? A lot of the psychics and seers have told me, yep. Could it have been a UFO? Yep. I'll tell you what it was that I know. It descended over the car, came over the top. And I was looking up because I was still in a kind of an interesting sadness, but I was fully aware of everything that was going on. I could see everything that was going on next to the car by me, just through my regular eyes. I mean, I'm aware here. And this thing, I'm looking up and it starts descending through the top. I couldn't see anything but this whiteness, and it kept going down and down. And then I looked at the dash, and it was coming over the dash. And it came over me, and I couldn't see anything. And I looked down towards my legs, and as it was descending down, I just started seeing nothing but whiteness. And I put my hands up to my eyes. I couldn't see anything but this whiteness. Just total whiteness for ever. And a feeling, a peaceful feeling, was there. It was a kind of a knowing, understanding, grateful, loving, peaceful feeling. But profound. Profound in its proportion to the understandings that it gave. It just somehow at that point I knew that everything was going to be okay. Not only was everything going to be okay, but somehow all of this had purpose and meaning.
Yes, indeed.
That somehow life, you know, that the miracles that you promised, that you believe in, all of you, they really do come true.
Absolutely. Okay.
It's just when you can start to put your heart into it, that unknown, more and more of it becomes known.
That's a really important point. Again, focusing on the heart and where the heart goes, because it's the heart that has got the wisdom and the truth intact, not the ego. The ego gets so distracted and really running off a lower vibration of frequency and the fear, and that's what I've shared with a lot of people too. We really need to be focused in the love, because that's when and where and how the clarity will come. And this is a beautiful experience that you're describing, Don, because I know that there have been a number of people who have just been, you know, capitalists and businessmen and, yeah, quote-unquote, successful in the eyes of the...
Well, that was 14 years ago, so, yeah.
Wow,
it's,
yeah,
all, it's gotten a lot funkier since.
And then what happened after that? Did you... Because obviously, somehow you were transported, and you had a very special communion with Source, and I sense that whiteness was rather luminous. Am I correct about that?
It was white.
Yeah.
It was like putting nothing whiteness. I mean white, but I mean total white.
Wow.
Where there is nothing else.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
And you felt a profound love with this experience.
Oh, profound understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Profound wisdom. Profound gratitude. Profound peace. Profound love.
So then where did it take you from there?
Well, you know, it left pretty much the same way it came. it rose up and out. So that's what I mean. What really was it? You know, folks, you'd think I'd be the one guy to know. But I really don't. Again, I mean, is it important? Was it that important that I knew? Maybe not. Maybe, you know, I'm getting a clearer picture of it all the time, but my heart's leading me down that road. My mind really can't get there. I mean, you know, all these beings, everything out there, all these wonderful beings and spiritual beings, they're about as real as off-worlders. They're in really no, I mean, just because all of a sudden you die, somehow you're in some extraordinary space that's beyond what is unknown, isn't, I mean, you're really there, you're just in a different vibration, different continuum, whatever.
Exactly.
And a lot of this has been going on, and it's showing itself to be more and more evident, of course, worldwide. So eventually the whole family's going to come together. I just think right now I'd rather take the easy road, and all of us should get together and make it sooner rather than later, because there's so much loving to do.
Yes, there is. Oh, isn't that the truth? And that's what I was going to ask you about this experience. Do you feel like it, in a sort of way, gave you permission or catapulted you into honoring what's in your heart when your heart was telling you that what you had been doing was wrong or no longer appropriate? Let's use the word no longer appropriate instead of wrong. It just wasn't, it didn't fit anymore what you needed to be doing. And so it seems that this is an affirmation or validation.
It is. Well, I have a twin brother, and competition seemed to be a flavor that was worldwide. And we knew a lot about competition, my brother and I, because we're twins. I mean, what didn't we compete at?
I'm a twin, too, yeah.
So it took on a new note. It's like, why compete?
Now, were you competing with each other?
Oh, no, not in that respect. But
okay.
We understood the nature of that.
Okay.
And it seemed to me that everybody can either have it all, they get nothing, they might get some, they might get a little, some are blessed with more, some aren't. Somehow that, since it's so diverse, I now took it out of the equation. Because it didn't matter.
Yeah.
The bottom line was, remove all that because it's so diverse, what does it matter? As far as getting down to it. What, I mean, if we're all here, and we're all able to be here during this kind of time, there must be something that makes us all special. Not one, not the other over another, but all of us. Because I keep somehow realizing that eventually you will touch everything in the universe, and how come that is so less important than touching everything at once? And it isn't. You know, it's the macro and the micro really becoming one, because they're all that important. Even the breath that comes off, you know, that someone breathes, even the breath they take are as important as everything else in the universe. Believe it or not, I actually feel that to be completely true. Therefore, that what happens right here in the now, if it weren't that important, why are you here, right now?
Absolutely.
You see, because the now really is where you're localized and focalized. Well, if it's not that important, what the hell are you doing here?
And that's something that we experience on the other side, too. It's always in the now. Everything is experienced in the now, and I can see people scratching their heads because from this lower dimensional, egoic point of view, it's really hard to fathom that. But that is absolutely the truth, and countless people to this point have iterated the same thing independently of one another. You know, to us it makes total sense when we're experiencing it. It's so natural. There's nothing strange or weird about it. In fact, through all of my near-death and spiritually transformative states, I felt more natural and more real than I do trying to just be in the traversing to these lower frequencies. This is what feels really strange to me, but it's all a part of that, you know, that divine plan and that divine source and what have you. And I give it the analogy of the different rings of an onion. There are a myriad of dimensions and frequencies, and they're all valid and they're all in their rightful place, and they all serve a really special purpose. So I think it's just a matter of opening up and being aware of this, and not being in denial. You know, there's still these people walking around trying to be in denial of anything that is beyond what they can perceive in their five sensory perceptions.
Well, not if they go to our BBSLA TV page and check out the newest video we have up there of the greatest story never told. Once you finish watching that hour and 40 minutes, you know, there's more there to watch, but that's really going to explain it. I mean, you'll have a deep resonating feeling that, yeah, okay. And nicely, because it's been that way for ever.
Wow. And what is this, who does the video? Tell us about that, Don.
Well, you know, it's been put together by the Disclosure Project, and we love the Disclosure Project. Dr. Greer.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, thank you. We love you. We love you at BBS Radio only because it's time, and it talks about that free energy is here. We have peaceful off-worlders, peaceful interdimensional energies.
Absolutely.
Peaceful type of animal or spiritual life living in our atmosphere. So those of you who think that glyphs don't exist, well, you know, or sylphs, you know, these cloud-like entities, or I mean, there's so many different names for some of the things they figured live in the unseen realms throughout our atmosphere. And they're confirming a lot of that, and they have a lot of video footage of it. And, you know, it's a magical world. Here's the beauty. Get with the program, and then start allowing it into your heart, and then we can create greater and greater and more wondrous miracles together, where we can all share in the bounty, and all share in the passion each one of us has. I not only want to share in my passion, I want to share in yours. I want to share in other people's passion because, you know, I'm always looking for the good book to read or maybe a good show to watch or maybe a good conversation to be in because other people excite me.
Yes, yes. In fact, yesterday I was packing the books for the move and I was looking at all of these books very fondly and thinking of their authors and thinking of the beautiful gift of doing this show, of learning such a wealth of information from these wonderful books, my growing library, and I just thought how blessed I am to be able to be doing this and the wonderful friends that I've made to this show, Toward the Light, and it's just, I feel such a great sense of awe because there's so much love and there's so much beauty that is being shared. And in fact, Dr. Greer and I were talking. We haven't actually done the booking yet, but he is going to be on this show. And then, of course, I was talking with
There's
you about.
There's fewer
that.
People I could tell you that I actually I couldn't ever say a bad thing about.
Yeah.
Because here's a guy who loves you so much, and he wants you to be able to benefit from what few have used corruptly.
Yeah.
And what few have used corruptly for decades.
Exactly. Cool. Boy, is that ever an understatement, and hence the panel that we're going to be working on. And I'm just going to let our listeners have a little bit of suspense because I'm going to keep it a surprise. But we are going to have a tremendous radio show coming up this fall with a special panel, a discussion panel. But this is very interesting how I know, too, that there's been free energy. In fact, that's what Nikola Tesla developed, or maybe I should say discovered/developed. And
yeah, they'll let out some of the new discoveries now and still hold back some of those because of such murderous documents have gone on surrounding some of these older type energies.
Yes.
But I think they're in a way now to start allowing some of the newer energies, the hydrogen type energies, water energies. I just think some of the energies that were available to us or could have been probably will stay dormant for a while longer, only because there's just so much murder surrounding them.
Yes. Oh, goodness. Isn't that the truth?
You
it's really mind-boggling to realize that.
Only so much people can stomach.
Oh, boy, isn't that the truth. And I'm one of those with a weak stomach as well. It's just really amazing what's going on. And that's, you know, I was looking at this situation with HARP, for example, and talk about murderers. I mean, this is absurd that thing is solely used for impose damage.
You've got a very few people. Few.
Exactly.
That have pulled the wool over enough people's eyes, blackmailed them, and caught them in compromising situations. And they use that. And really, you know, I would have to say that there's so few that that should be brought to an end. And the few that have been manipulating and controlling things, events throughout the world with these kind of results should be brought to the round table, hint, hint, and they should be tried by the people, only because their actions have been so overwhelmingly insane and haven't let up yet, that they need to be brought before the people to answer for that.
Well, it's interesting how they're in a place of utter desperation because, as my friend Kathy O'Brien so rightly pointed out, they are totally unaware of the power of
the consequences. They are unaware of the unseen and the real, very real consequences of what they do. It's kind of like Jesus was saying, they know not what they do. Well, these ones might even be, you know, he might be even talking about them. They truly don't know. They're just, they shouldn't be in those positions because we're getting the result of what that means to the rest of the world. And if you don't, again, people, are we being helped from afar? Yes. Are they here and connecting with people? Yes. Does it mean a heck of a lot? Well, yeah, it will, but the interesting part of it all is that you can't overthrow what people have allowed. Even though, you know, I would have to say it would be just hurrah if we would stop the banking families and the few elite that have taken over and held the rest of the world hostage and ransom for the last 40, 50, 60 years. And it's a concern. It's a concern that has grown into global mass murder, and they still are relentless. Now, can I accept that with such beautiful people and it's such a beautiful new evolutionary understanding coming to the people of this planet? No, I can't allow the monkeys of a criminal class to rule. Now, it wouldn't make sense to me. I somehow would be have lost the whole point for being here if I could allow that with my own understandings and my own heart. And I think that enough people these days are truly understanding that, and it's gotten to a point that change that we have sought is coming.
Oh, it's
coming. It might even be here, folks.
Yes.
The energies are arriving, and I would be smiling a lot because, interestingly enough, I think a lot of things are going to start changing at a pretty good clip, and I think that involves social changes. The corruption has gotten that bad, and many people can point enough fingers to the few that have made it that bad.
And they've been doing this for thousands of years.
Yeah, and
of years.
We know. And there's no way they can hide and streamline the data and prevent it from getting out anymore. They just have screwed up so often, so loudly, with such murderous intent, people have had enough.
Well, and again, you know, the fact is that they do not know the power of the human spirit or of love.
Of love.
They're just clueless about that. As Kathy says, they're flat thinkers, and they can't even fathom the power of love. And that's why it is so important, and why I'm doing this work, is to help really prove to people that love is the ultimate power, and that when we can be in a place of love and not in fear, and I know it's easier said than done. I mean, I'll feel really nervous and frightened, and then when I start to go into those states, I have to just keep reminding myself, stay in the love, because it is only through being in the love that we can gain clarity and the power to make the necessary changes that need to be made. But they are going to happen, and I see you as being a huge part of that, Don, you know, by opening all these portals of communications so that people all over the world can have access to this love and to this truth and no longer feel isolated and alone.
Thank you. You know, it's because none of us are alone. We all have great hearts. We all want the best for the rest. And we're just a beautiful place, I hope, that brings this all together, and it brings enough people together that dynamically it really starts to change the world. I would love nothing better than for all of us to have free energy boxes that are, you know, 50-pound boxes, little square boxes, never worried about having to plug anything in. If you didn't have to worry about money and the food, and you could, what would you do with it? I mean, that would be the beginning. See, that's a great thing to bring out, because that would just be the beginning of the next step towards a vision that is within easy reach. This isn't even science fiction, it's science fact.
Yes, indeed. I'm very well aware of that, too, and I'm trying to remember. Oh, goodness me, it was so many years ago. I heard somebody talking about just these, it almost looks like a cylindrical tube that's rounded at the top, and it's a source of free energy. And I heard about this years and years and years ago, and it escapes my mind at the moment who was talking about this, but it's been around for quite some time. And when I think about money, and this is my view, that money is just something that was created and generated and imposed by these nasty, sinister so-and-sos, you know.
You know how it works? I kind of think of these little... I call them little because they're small. I should use the word small. Is it a judgment call? Well, you decide. But these small people are kind of like a little virus. The information that they hide eventually gets posted to other people's thoughts. Till enough people understand the information that was trying to remain hidden, then it can never remain hidden again.
Yes.
So it's kind of like when people get a bad virus throughout the world or something happens, that eventually a small percentage of the people will have, even if they were exposed to or not, they're on the other side of the world. It's kind of like taking spit and sending it in a jar and analyzing it when you do something emotionally to the other person. There's a reaction. So if some people on this side of the planet actually got sick from an unknown virus, there might be people in the East that are being born at that moment with the antibodies. That's kind of like a clone. This is how this system beautifully works.
Yes,
and
good
so
point.
You get these people that try to hide the information, and they're trying so hard that it does exactly the opposite. It always was meant to. I mean, it you've got magnetism, you've got the duality, you've got that... energies and vibration and motion in a circular, motion. I mean, it just somehow, you're never going to get around it. You're just going to perpetuate it. And that is the same with this kind of information. And now we've reached that critical mass.
Yes. And I think a really good point with this too, Don, is the fact that we are all by nature telepathic. And so... You know, we could get this information, like maybe your mom says something to you from this higher frequency that she's now operating on.
Mm-hmm.
Something comes to us in a dream. I mean, lots and lots of information comes to us through our dream states and then through these other very powerful experiences that we have. And so there's so much validity in all of this. Again, we're talking about different dimensions and frequencies. So the messages are going to reach us, and it seems somehow in a really profound, just right on time kind of thing. It's very, very special that this happens. And, you know, a very simple example of this is that somebody will be thinking about someone, and then the phone rings, and it's that individual that the person will be thinking
about.
Oh,
yeah, it's kind of like we're all starting to go back to being amoebas.
Oh gosh! Well, we really are all connected in such a deep and complete way to one another. You know, so I think that it's important to, you know, for people not to worry and fear, that if they just allow themselves to relax into the heart, that all the information they need is going to come to them, is available.
It's kind of like osmosis.
Mm, well, exactly.
Osmosis, amoeba. Yeah, it's a dynamic thing. We probably have a solar maximum coming. We have a lot more energy throughout the universe. It's sending stuff at a fast rate, faster than light, at light, whole new spectrums. But it's things seem to be very active, and more information is penetrating us.
Oh, hugely.
Literally penetrating, yes. And yeah. It's causing more information to move faster. So some guys thought maybe on the eastern part of the world, boom, his thought can actually reach me. I know, a little weirder, but it actually reaches me, maybe not only quicker, but penetrates me more because of the amount of energies that are coming in. Hey. That's about as whacked as I get on this show, folks.
Well, it's not wacky at all, Don, because I had a Claude Swanson. Come on, our wonderful synchronized universe.
Yeah.
And he points out, you know, all this stuff about remote viewing and telepathy. It is not weakened by space or time. So what you were just saying is extremely valid, because somebody can be having a thought or an experience and you will get it immediately, no matter where you are.
And even if you don't want it, what I'm saying
is
this information's coming so fast. If you're good at transmuting energies, a lot of people like to do that. That's great. But it's coming in.
Well, I do that with I do that with the Reiki. And it's so fun because most of the work I do is remotely. And so when I'm doing Reiki, and of course a lot of visions come to me whilst I'm doing the Reiki, and I just had... this past week I was doing some remote Reiki sessions and remote viewing, and it was so interesting how my client, you know, she would first describe how she was impacted by the Reiki and how so aligned it was with exactly what I was transmitting and experiencing, and it was very, very powerful. And not one person has ever not been affected by the Reiki. And,
yeah.
And I do it to people all over the world. It doesn't matter where they are. So it's really the same principle as the Reiki, the telepathy. It's instant.
Well, it works too. It seems to be also profound. Like, let's say you're having a bug problem. And we're coming into summer months, folks. A lot of you are going to have it.
Oh, bugs,
spiders, roaches, ants, termites, whatever it is, silverfish. Try sitting down with your family. Try it. Just try it. It doesn't cost you a cent. It might even work. I'll tell you, it works here. So it might work for you. Is it coincidental? You try it and find out. But get the family together, get into a room, and meditate and ask that you don't want to use chemicals, you don't want to become a consumer and have to buy into that and poison your septic tanks with the Clorox, the bleaches, and all the roaches and killer products that they have out there to kill everything known. Do away with it and try some meditation and really ask, really get down and ask that this problem remove itself. And do that, you know, with as much love and intent and joy as you can, and then stop And if you see them, stop removing these forms of life by swatting them and killing them. Rather take them outside, and eventually things in your whole house change. It's like the little things that we do that work with nature, and I think people can start using a lot of their own inner magic, even though it's unseen.
Yes. Actually, I just had an experience with a bunch of sugar ants, and I said, well, lads, you know, mates, you're all trespassing here, and this isn't where you need to be, and I don't believe in using poisons and stuff like that either.
Yeah.
I'd rather just lovingly send them on their way, so I telepathically communicate with them, and then I also used a little bit of peppermint and cinnamon, because they don't like that sort of repellent, and sure enough, they actually did disappear.
Yeah.
And so I really resonate with what you're saying, because I think, and even singly, even if somebody else isn't available to meditate with us, if we just telepathically speak to them.
Exactly. You know, it's the love that they'll feel.
Yes.
That's why you got to put love into the asking, because they're really going to feel that.
And they are.
Yeah.
Absolutely, they are. And I actually... You know, even though I'm not keen on a lot of them, I do respect them, you know.
Exactly.
And I'm actually heading south, where there are going to be more boogies, and I'll just, you know, talk to them lovingly and say, well, please not here, mate, because you belong on the other side of this wall or what have you. But I remember one time I was in Nashville, and it was when I was living in Nashville, and it was right after I had the cataract surgery, and I hadn't been able to see stars or anything. I was almost totally blind as a result of that. Well, interestingly, shortly after the cataracts had been removed, somebody came to visit me and knocked on my door. And as soon as I opened the door, right at eye level was this most glorious lightning bug. And
wow.
I just felt like that little creature was there to greet me. And
don't
I was
you
so
feel
awestruck.
Honored?
Yeah. Oh, I did.
You do. How could you not?
Oh, it was so beautiful. It was. I was absolutely awestruck like a little child. It was so beautiful to me. And then my friend came. I think I was being picked up to be taken to a gig to do a performance. But that just lit me up, speaking of lightning bugs. And I had not seen them before. So
wow.
This was a very beautiful gift, and then
yeah.
After that I was able to see stars. I still can't see a whole lot of stars because I'm still legally blind, as it were, quote, quote. But I can see stars now as I wasn't able to before, and enjoy the lightning bugs, and there's just so much beauty to behold, and I think it is important to regard all life with reverence.
Yeah.
So I really
want
to thank you for making that wonderful point. Well, do you have anything special that you would like to share with our listeners? Any special developments with BBS or what have you that you'd like to share?
You know, just one. If you're not going to put your heart to work now, hey, you know, you're probably not going to do it in the future, because right now the world wants you, it loves you, and working together is really how we're going to see an actualization of things that'll bring this planet and all of its people into fruition with the and balance and harmony with the rest of the universe. And the reason things are speeding up right now so fast, because it's going to happen in our lifetime if we truly want it to.
And I think it really, really will. It reminds me of that.
Transformative.
Yes, yes. Reminds me of the wonderful song, What the World Needs Now Is Love, Sweet Love.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that we don't have enough of, or however it goes. But it's a very, very beautiful song.
I love it.
And I really think it's relevant that, you know, we stay centered in love, and that we listen to the heart, and the heart is what leads us to truth, not the head. It's not the other way around. It really is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is so essential is invisible to the eye. And that's why I like to remind people of that.
Amen. Thank you.
Well, I really want to thank you for being with us, Don. It's so wonderful to have a wonderful man behind the scenes for all the work that you've been doing. And I really commend you for the wonderful work that you've been doing and the wonderful family we have broadcasting through the BBS network and through the Conscious Media network, and this is really, really wonderful. And again, I think this is a good example of the fact that love really is getting the upper hand, because there is a way that the light is always going to pop through all of this darkness and show itself. And even if you're in a very darkened room and there's just a little gleam of light comes through the bottom of the door, the light breaks the darkness, but the darkness cannot break the light.
Hear, hear. Thank
yes.
you. Thank you for allowing me on your program. I love you all, to your audience. Thank you for tuning in to me on Juliet's program. I really appreciate it. I love you, Juliet.
Oh, I love you too, Don, and it's been such an honor to have you with us. And so, well, sign off for this transmission of Toward the Light. We've just been speaking with Don Newsom, who is the co-founder, I should say, with his twin brother, Doug, and president of BBS Radio. And it was so wonderful having him speak with us and share some of his special experiences and with his wonderful mom. And I just feel a loving energy around us right now. So again, I want to remind you, yes, indeed, we can never say this too much. It is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. And we are going to be speaking with Bill Guggenheim next week. He is the author of Hello from Heaven, speaking of after-death communications. So that is a wonderful, wonderful book to read, and I'd like to encourage you to read that and tune in next week for another transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale signing off. For now, we will speak to you next week. Lots of love and blessings to all of you. Keep smiling. Love is with you at all times. We'll speak to you next week. Cheerio for now.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.